Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of July 10th, and with me on a hot, muggy Sunday morning is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
We haven't been mugged yet, but it is hot and it is Sunday.
I got all the information right. Woohoo!
You did indeed. I know. Gold star.
What a great start.
Smiley face.
It's all uphill from here, though.
It is. It will be for the next hour.
Or so, depending on how we can get through this. On this week's show, we've got a quick chat with Rafael Dolis of Hanshin. We're going to talk about the Tigers, individual leaders, and handle a whole lot of high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right. Well, the past week I was at the ballpark a couple of places. I had a swing and a miss at Tokyo Dome, but I made contact at Yokohama Stadium with Alex Ramirez and Rafael Dolis of the Hanshin Tigers.
So you made contact. So what was your exit velocity? Because, you know, that's the big thing these days. And launch angle. Don't forget launch angle. You need good launch
angle. I got out of there in a hurry because it was my day off. But I think my launch angle was 180 degrees because I was moving on my own 2 feet. Nobody was launching me.
What about your exit velocity?
It was as fast as my imbalanced legs would carry me.
All right. So, sounds good.
It was good. It was a real pleasure. I didn't know. Now, I had a backup plan because Claudio Rodriguez of the Baseball Japonés was there, and he was going to help me interpret if Dolis, the Hanshin Tigers closer, would. It's funny, I kind of channel, I hear Claudio's voice when I speak in Spanish this week because I talked to him. I saw him 3 times, and When I'm speaking Spanish names, I hear his voice talking through my ears. And well,
that's quite a conversation going on in your head, buddy. You all right? all those voices in your head. Confusing.
Claudio told me to do it. Okay, now, so Claudio was going to interpret for me if Mr. Dolis did not speak English adequately, but he was very cheerful and eager to speak as much more than I was. So we talked about this and that, and he'll tell you about the one thing is you have to be aware of. He says a new pitcher, and he's talking about his new pitch.
Yeah. Yes. Be aware.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So when you hear a pitcher, it's him talking about his pitch, not some rival in the Hanshin Tigers bullpen.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So let's have a listen to Rafael Dolis.
So first of all, congratulations on a good start to your career here in Japan.
Thank you.
Now, what did you know about Hanshin Tigers? Because you must have had other offers besides the Hanshin. For this season, why settle for a Hanshin?
My first season.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know that I just got to Japan last year. The team don't know
right.
me yet.
Right.
Because sometimes you can be like good in other countries. Mm-hmm. You go to other country play. Nobody know you. Mm-hmm. And like other boys have to test you first mm-hmm. before they give you the position.
Right.
Yeah.
But this year, really consistent.
Yeah.
Now, what are some of the is there anything about Japan that makes it easy to be consistent here?
No, because right now, I learn like throwing new pitchers.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm gonna start like throw forkball last year. Yeah, that's why.
I'm checking the fingers now too.
Because
I have my friend from Puerto Rico. His fingers are too short to throw forkball. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's why
you started last year for the forkball.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's why I think I change a little bit. You know what I mean? Okay. Now I think I'm better. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah, because I got like new pitcher and forkball. I think that's the best one of the pitchers. Good. Okay. Ball, yeah.
Okay, so you added that, and now a lot of people come to Japan. And it's a really hard transition for some people. What have been some of the hard things for you to deal with?
About what? Speaking or
maybe,
baseball?
No, about maybe just your... Well, in the end, it comes to baseball.
Oh.
Because you got to be consistent, focused on the game.
Oh, yes.
But there's a lot of outside stuff here.
Yeah. No, because I was thinking like... was like a bit different, but I don't think so. It's like the same. I feel like the same like in USA, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. Like good people, person like safe. You can hang out anytime you want. Nobody gonna bother you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I know. My friend from Venezuela, he told me that. Yeah. He said like, you can't take a taxi home. He says, no, trains are good. They're safe. Everybody's good. I says, I'm so used to being in Japan. I forget how easy it is.
Yeah, that's easy. You can hang out like anytime, 1 o'clock and midnight, whatever.
And no one's gonna bother you.
Yeah, no one's gonna bother you.
That's you know, you never have that in the back of your mind, so you can focus on the game.
Yeah.
You got Monday off.
Yeah. So just like that. You also like same routine, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where like when everything gonna work, you have to do like same routine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why I cannot change like anything, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
So in Japan, that is easier because the schedule's very the same every day.
Yeah, same. Yeah, you know, have like Monday off, like week, you have to, you know what I mean? You have to be ready for the game. Just like that, yeah.
Now, you get some surprises in the game. You mean what, like get ready now?
No, because I know...
You're the closer,
I know what situation I have to try. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have like 6 days. Well, I have like some not many time, mm-hmm. like long day, no pitching. It's like sometimes you don't have to throw in no matter what in the game. That's a hard part. I don't know when I'm going to throw, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they don't like to use guys just to use them.
Yeah, just to use it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a different.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically fastball, what was your breaking pitch before you picked up the forkball?
Yeah, it's two seam. That's my best speed, yeah, two seam.
So four seam, two seam?
Yeah. Yeah, for 2 seam, I throw more 2 seam more.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that's what I throw. Sometimes I throw like 4 seam for lefty inside.
Okay.
But I use my
right,
2 seam.
Right.
Yeah.
To get it away from him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So how about the Japanese batters adjusting, because they're a little different.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Everybody swing. Everybody like swing here, and you have to, like. Just throw the ball right in the middle, you know what I mean? Throw your best pitching.
Okay.
The pitching you think you're going to get out, you know what I mean?
Try to miss the bat?
Yeah, just try, like, throw my foul ball. When everybody have 2 strikes, just try, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Because everybody try, like...
Just
like,
cutting it.
Yeah, you score that like, foul ball.
Yeah.
That big difference. Yeah.
Was that mentally difficult for you to, or did you pick up really easily?
Yeah, I just like learn about that, you know what I mean? That's my 2 years, and sometimes you have to know everything.
Okay, well, I'll never know everything.
Yeah.
So the forkball is a big thing for you.
Yeah.
When did you feel like you had a really good command of forkball?
I was with Detroit,
uh-huh.
like 3 years ago,
uh-huh.
and I'm still like... The practice, like, just throwing, you know what I mean, throwing. Like, it's very good. And in the game, that was, like, a bit different because I cannot control it.
Right.
I try, like, to throw and just throw high.
Okay.
Now, I don't know. And I throw. So, and last year, I would come to Japan. So, like, everybody throw folk. So,
uh-huh.
I don't care. I'm going to throw that shit. I throw it.
Oh, so the coaches were saying, let's see.
And I feel, and I learned throw folk, yeah.
Did you get some help from the coaches with a splitter? Because everybody throws it here.
No, because when I get here, everybody think I got like natural folk.
Oh, okay.
Or I'm not, no.
Okay.
Just laying more because the ball is like a little bit different.
It's a little smaller.
Yeah, a little bit different, yeah.
Okay.
And now I try with ball like from USA.
Uh-huh.
Now I feel like the same. I can throw like same, yeah.
You got same feel.
Yeah, same feel now. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good luck the rest of the year and stay healthy.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Rafael. It was a great pleasure and good luck the rest of the season, man.
Yeah, thank you very much, Rafael. Good to hear you.
So I assume you haven't spoken much with him in the past?
I have not. I have yet to meet him.
Okay, so what did you take out of our very positive, energetic Tigers closer?
Yeah, first of all, I want to acknowledge we do some of these interviews with guys whose language is not, whose first language is not English.
Right.
And they are very accommodating, I guess,
in
those terms.
Right, because... They're just trying to communicate.
Yeah, so it's a real pleasure when they agree to be on the show. So I just want to say thank you. I know it's not easy, and like you said, you know, correcting his English, that's far from, you know, we're certainly not making fun of him, and we appreciate the time and And I got it right away. I said, oh, he means pitch. So, okay, that's cool.
And I guess my one point was, I for some reason, probably because I didn't do enough homework, I kept thinking that he came to Japan this year, and I forgot that he was around last year, but he didn't make an impact last year.
Right. Yeah, it was Mateo who was got the closer job. So, I just like when I hear these guys talking about developing a new pitch, how they get it ready quickly. I don't remember the player's name, but I remember you did an interview a few years back with a Swallows pitcher who said basically he got a pitch game ready in season, you know, during the season, decided to start throwing a changeup or something. I can't exactly remember what it was or who it was, but it reminded me of that chat because he's getting a forkball game ready pretty quickly. And it seems like obviously we heard him talk about the natural action that he has on the ball, and that people thought already that he was throwing a fork. And so he just had to probably get the shape on it and learn how to control it, because he told us, look, he threw it in the minors, he didn't know where it was going.
Yeah, it was good in the bullpen. It was good in practice.
Yeah, and
it was good in theory, but it was poor in practice. I don't know how that works, but
yeah, and I like how these guys admit, you know, hey, look, I was throwing it in the minor leagues, and he, essentially he's telling us that this is something he needed to work on. And that the coaches wanted him to work on it, so he was working on it in games, but he just had no clue where it was going to go. And so this is what happens when I like how we get to actually see in NPB, since there's only one farm team, you actually get to see young players working on their pitches in games, and the managers and the coaches put them out there with full knowledge. This kid is probably going to give up some runs in this inning, but we just want to get him used to facing these batters on this level. So we're going to sacrifice whatever it is we're sacrificing, whether we're up by 3 runs and we can get him through the inning with only 1 run allowed, or whatever it is, whatever they calculate.
Mm.
And so we see this is the case when you don't have a lot of farm, a deep farm system, that you've got to resort to this kind of thing. And so I think his pitch obviously is game ready, I also think it's just something they want him to throw to mix in in terms of facing these batters, because if he sits back and throws, unless he can hit every area of the strike zone with pinpoint control with his pitches, or his fastball essentially, then they want him to throw them off by mixing in a forkball here. And he said he throws a two-seamer as well. So I mean, he's got a good arsenal, and I've seen a lot of his games this year, and he puts guys on base. And I think some of it is because he doesn't have the pinpoint control, but he's not getting hit hard. As long as he's not getting knocked around, I think they feel very confident that they can leave him out there, and that he'll eventually get through the lineup to a point where he can get somebody out with relative ease. And so I think some of the fans sit back and say, okay, the roller coaster is starting, or here we go again. The other part of some of the games that I've seen with Rafael on the mound is that the defense hasn't always been sharp behind him either. And so he's allowed some base runners, but it hasn't always been him putting them on so much as the guys behind him not making the plays or completing a play. So that was what I found interesting, or the most interesting, because I just figured these guys can't come here and just throw fastball after fastball, and he's got this natural fork, as he calls it, and his hands look big. Obviously, you saw his hands.
Exactly, because that was the first thing. As soon as he says his forkball, I'm looking down and looking at his fingers, and they're really long because former Swallow and Giant and Marine Dicky Gonzalez said, I asked him about the forkball. He says, no, man, my fingers are too short. So first thing I did, as soon as he said, oh, yeah, you got the long fingers, you didn't be commenting.
Well, they look, I mean, his hands look massive on TV. So, yeah, just shaking hands big. With him, they just swallow you up, I'm sure.
Yeah, he probably makes my hands look small.
Wow.
So, yeah, no, it's not easy. So, so that was one thing, and that was kind of interesting. And to me, you know, I took a little different spin, or I guess lack of spin, since we're talking about a forkball.
Yay!
Is that his thing was, he didn't know where it was going when he was throwing it in practice. And then, or he knew where it was going when he threw it in practice. He had command of it in the bullpen, basically. But when he got into games, he couldn't predict it. And that was okay. That wasn't okay until you got to Japan and everybody was throwing it. So what the heck?
Right.
So that's, to me, that was sort of the thing. Well, everybody's throwing it. And the other thing was, if he also had a good connection with the ball here. The ball did well with that. So now the thing that resonated with me, I guess two things, and one regarding that, was the number of pitchers I've talked to who said, you know, when I ask them, I ask people in the States when I go to the winter meetings, I ask people in the States, what does Japan do to players, but that you have these guys come back and have really good major league careers after coming to Japan?
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, but they happen. You know, these are guys who nobody had the time of day for.
Cast-offs.
Exactly, cast-offs. Where's Tom Hanks when you need him? And he was a cast-away.
Where are the Swallows? Remember I had bad things to say about Swallows players.
Cast-offs. Well, the Swallows look like they're lost on a desert island. So the one of the things was how they learned discipline. The pitchers learned slide steps. They feel better. They have better command of their secondary stuff. But they also, Fernando Seguinal of the Chicago Cubs was saying something to the effect that one of the things that Japan does for people is it allows pitchers and players to have success at a higher level.
Hmm.
They get into an environment where it's good for them, and instead of failure at the major league level, they're having success in front of big crowds and high-pressure situations, playing meaningful games. And he said that confidence, they have confidence, and that's a huge thing. Because
right.
Instead of being on the bubble, they're now part of the team and relied on, and they're getting a taste of that. So he said that, you know, he thought that was a big factor, and I think that is. And Scott Matheson said something similar earlier this year, when I asked him about Shinosuke Abe and his relationship and his growth, and he said Shinosuke Abe had a huge impact on his career because one of the things he told him when he was catching him was he would say 80%. And what he meant was you don't have to be 100% with every pitch. You have margin for error. Do the best you can. And if your pitch, you can execute at 80%, you're going to get guys out and you're going to be successful.
Mm, interesting.
And so every failure was not a failure. Every failure was part of the norm, provided you're prepared and Scott's prepared, and provided you're fit and Scott's fit, and you're competitive, which he
definitely
he definitely is. So that whole thing was, what I've seen is, one of the things I've seen in Japan, and you heard it when Dennis Sarfati talked about his pitches. And Scott, too. Scott went from just throwing fastballs to he'll throw pitches in any count. He's confident in throwing pitches in any count. His forkball, which he didn't have when he came to Japan, he'll start people with sliders. You know, whatever works. He's got more pitches. He's got more confidence. And then in Japan, there's one... Japan's a place where you can do that. And when, as soon as he said that with a forkball, I thought, this is that Japan syndrome,
like it's some kind of illness.
Well, no, but it's a phenomenon where people come here and it's not necessary, and they're succeeding not necessarily because the competition is less, but because it's the pressure and the situation is skewed differently.
Exactly, yeah.
So that was interesting. And I guess the other thing was, it didn't occur to me, although people, this is one of those things that people tell you all the time,
okay.
but it doesn't always sink in on a larger level other than, oh, he said this, yes, that's true, was the one where he doesn't have trouble preparing, and he loves that Japan is very easy, is ultra consistent. You know, the travel schedules are fixed, everything's fixed, Monday's off, this is practice, blah, blah, blah. But the thing that is hard for him is not is not getting to pitch regularly enough. And it occurred to me, and I should probably check on this, but I would think most Japanese teams, one of the areas where they fail is because they're so into routines.
Mm-hmm.
Their eighth and ninth inning guys, if they're playing badly, they don't pitch. They're keeping these guys on the shelf sometimes for a week.
Right.
Because they don't want to waste them.
We've seen that a lot. Yeah.
And some of the times these guys are going to waste. And this is something I knew, but people tell me about all the time. But I, having talked to Dennis and other relievers, I think, this is kind of a problem. And I've seen that, especially Sunday. When you're watching a Sunday game, you know, and they had a complete game the day before, and the manager is conserving his bullpen like he's got eight games in 8 days.
Right.
And they got a day off tomorrow. And they got guys that haven't pitched in a week.
And I've talked about this before. It's so difficult, I think, especially for the middle relievers, but also for anybody in any role in the bullpen. When you don't know going to work that day whether you're going to actually get on the field or not, but you have to prepare physically and mentally to go out and compete. Mm. And it's so difficult. And you get ready, you know, if you can imagine Rafael in this situation, he gets ready during that 8-game skid that the Tigers recently had. He's getting ready to pitch mentally. That makes things a challenge. I also found it interesting that Rafael says something similar to what Spencer Patton said, who was on the show recently, and he essentially said the Japanese batters are hard to set up, because I think he was saying, you know, you get them into counts where you think you can throw a pitch and, you know, they're not going to be ready to swing at it, and they end up taking really good swings. And then Rafael, his comment in his interview was, they don't like to let strikes go by.
Pretty much, yeah.
Which I really liked. So that was interesting stuff. So yeah, this was a good interview. I appreciate you going out and doing the chat.
No, it's my pleasure. It's always fun to get out there. I had some other a variety of interesting things I picked up that day, and had it was a good day at the ballpark. So
yeah. So let's talk about the Tigers now. We've documented a little bit of their struggles, but and we were talking a bit about it before we actually started taping, and you said essentially since May 17th they haven't really been great.
Yeah, they were smoking from basically, we're 3 months into the season, give or take, you know. Okay. And the smoking as in red hot, and you know, nobody can stop them. And then they went through a month, essentially interleague, where they were .500. You know, they sometimes they lose three, sometimes they win.
And then coming out of interleague, they lost the last two games of interleague and the first two games, first six games against Central League foes. And then they've been .500 in July, but they've just been, what was their record since?
They're not scoring. Basically, since the end of interleague, they've had one game where they scored 10 runs, and other than that, it's been pretty much red smoking as in a dumpster fire.
Hashtag high heat.
So yeah, I mean, obviously, I've talked about the defense and having to make more pitches for the pitchers when you don't field balls, and plus the errors, and then, you know, now it's getting hot, and there are all kinds of reasons for why the pitching might be failing them at this stage of the game. But I other than them having to run guys in and out of the lineup because they're looking for some defense at times, they're looking for offense at times, they just haven't been able to be consistent. And the latest, I guess, showing of that was the fact that we've been seeing more Yusuke Oyama than we have in the past. And I don't know if they're forcing this kid to, I don't know. I don't know what the plan is. It just seems to me that he's not ready. He's just not consistent at the plate. And I hear color commentators talk about his swing and how strong a swing is. He's got a really quick bat, but it's not going to matter if he's not making contact, which he's really not making enough contact.
I think one of the things with the Tigers is that really their pitching, I think they're in terms of runs scored and runs allowed, they had some good stretches, you know, in April, where right. everything was coming, where the pitching and defense was coming together. But that was sort of the anomaly. You know, they started the season giving up more runs than they would have liked, and that's about where they are now. But the real difference is that they were scoring 5, 6, 7 runs a game.
Exactly.
Frequently. And now, and you know, they've been shut out 3 times in the since the end of Interleague. They've been shut out 3 times. They've scored 1 run 3 times. It hasn't been the defense. It's been the lack of offense. So, now that's the part actually that the Tigers have essentially they have the answer. They have all the offensive pieces they need. But I think I don't know what is paranoia about the defense or you know, we've got to fix it that has caused this sort of uncertainty, or just is just random variation. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to get a read, and I think that's just a what we're seeing is a manifestation of inconsistency in the outfield, and I thought defensively was what we were going to see, right? Is that they don't have anybody who really is a natural center fielder out there on a regular basis. And then when they put a guy like Yamato Maeda, they put him out there in center field. He actually started as an infielder, as I recall.
Yep. Well, pretty much every center fielder in Japan started as a second baseman and vice versa.
Right. And so he's not a natural center fielder, although he is really good in center. But their daily lineup has a guy out there who is just not necessarily suited to play that position. And I think the other day against DeNA, we had Kosuke Fukudome lose a ball in the lights. It just didn't look like a good effort, but I think he lost the ball in the lights. And those kinds of things are just happening where they're not making
looks like a good effort. Yeah, that's unfortunate because he's a guy who really does give a good effort.
He does.
Consistently.
Yeah, it's just one of those balls. I didn't think he was going to catch it, and then I think he just lost it in the lights, and rather than get hit in the face, he just decided that it's not worth it. Live to play another play, which I totally agree with at his age. Just let it go. You know, there's going to be another game tomorrow. But yeah, if you're a fan, you might not see it that way.
Duck and cover. Yeah, indeed. No, I think it's some of it has to do, yeah, with realizing the defense wasn't good enough, and then trying to make changes, and the changes causing more trouble than the defense caused.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, it's not a good situation. But I do like the bullpen. I think the bullpen has been really good, especially their left-hander relievers, whoever they bring out there. The guys on the left side have been really good at run prevention. The right-handed relievers have been okay. But they're getting decent starting pitching. I don't really see them tumbling. And I know DeNA is really close in the standings at the moment, but if the Tigers can right the ship, which I expect them to do at some point, they've got to get through July.
Okay.
And then in August, they have the road trip of death, so to speak.
Oh, which everybody calls it that, except my former boss.
But in terms of wins and losses, I don't really see the Dragons as a threat, although they had been winning a few games. And the thing with the Dragons is they do play good defense, and they do play, they do pitch well. So they're going to be in games. They're just going to have tight games. But they had a stretch where everything went right for them, where they won a bunch of close games and they were playing some weaker teams. I don't see that holding up. So I think that second place battle between DeNA and Hanshin is going to be fun to watch. And you know, quite honestly, at the moment, I see DeNA the hotter team, but I'm not sure if they're the better team or not. I need more evidence over the second half.
okay, well, you go out and, you know, we'll give you some baggies and you go out and collect your evidence.
I'll go CSI it, baby. Just cordon off some space and just start looking for evidence.
Looking for bodies in some teams.
All right, so let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the leaders. Now, this assignment was to give me the guys who you think who are surprising leaders for you in certain categories. So...
Is that what it was for? I just got a note. It said leaders. Okay, talk about leaders. Okay, I'm good.
Okay,
surprising leaders.
So for me, it's Toshiro Miyazaki of DeNA who's the batting leader at the moment. Yeah. And I've heard some NPB guys talking about his hands and how quick they are and how he's been able to make adjustments to pitches while they're on the way to the plate and his development as a hitter overall. And he's the biggest surprise for me in terms of being the batting leader because we're talking about a guy who was picked in the sixth round in 2012 in the draft. And I think he played his most amount of games last year and he had a good postseason. And now here he is leading the league in hitting at almost 350. And it's just, I mean, it's shocking, but he showed flashes, I think, at times last year, and I thought this guy maybe can hit. If he had a regular position, it'd be interesting to see what he could do. And I thought he was decent at third base, and it seems like this year I think he's actually the best third baseman defensively that they've put on the field from what I've seen. So I'm picking him as my biggest surprise leader in terms of leading. And another one is Alex Guerrero of the Chunichi Dragons leading in home runs. And I had a discussion with a Twitter follower, and it seemed, I don't remember the conversation, but it seemed like I said that Guerrero wouldn't get to 25 home runs, and he's partly because he's playing at Nagoya Dome, which is you know not a homer park, but he has 9 home runs at Nagoya Dome so far. But he's got 22 overall, and he's leading the Central League, was leading Japan for a little while there. But he's leading the Central League with all those solo home runs. I think 22 home runs, 19 of them are with the bases empty. So I have to get, I want the opportunity to ask him, are guys pitching him differently when there are runners on base? Or is it a him thing or is it a pitcher thing? Because this is too weird. And I do also have to find somebody who can get the record for solo home runs in a season by a player who's hit, let's say, at least 20 home runs, because I think this has to be some kind of a record pace, although I haven't seen it in any of the reports that I've read.
No, that's a hard one to find.
I think it is. That's why we haven't
seen because, it. Yeah, because I don't have records. I mean, I have every player's a number, you know, their home run totals.
Right.
And I have, and even I don't keep how many runners are on base on each home run. They do in the game notes, but I don't have them. You know, I haven't found a way to sort those out and make use of those things, so I couldn't really tell you. And I don't have the box scores for every NPB game yet.
I threw it in there. I knew they're coming. They're coming. So what about you?
I think Miyazaki is a big surprise, and oddly, you know, you should mention that because that was my question for Alex Ramirez when I talked to him on Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday. No, hold on, excuse me. It was Wednesday. When I spoke to him on Wednesday, I said, "Who was the surprise for you?" And he said, "Miyazaki." And I won't go into the whole thing, but he said, "Yeah, I saw him." Just to paraphrase him, yeah, I saw he had something special last year, but his defense was part of the problem. And basically he solved that problem. He came, says, as the season went on, and over the winter he got, I'm guessing in camp, he got better. He's gotten really good at pitch recognition. And he has a slow bat, you know. And what I mean a slow bat is he keeps the bat in the zone a lot, a long time, and he can respond to pitches and do things really. He has quick hands, but a slow bat. In other words, he keeps, you know, it's an Ichiro kind of thing.
Okay.
so he can react late. He's not swinging the bat hard, but he's making solid contact. He's getting good angles on the ball. He's making he's squaring the ball with a minimum of effort because his hands are so quick. And his pitch recognition means he's not getting fooled. He's not swinging at pitches outside the zone. He's drawing a zillion walks. Well, Alex didn't say a zillion. I added that.
You're throwing it in there. Embellish emphasis. A little. It's all right.
Embellishment, sorry. Indeed. Indeed. And Alex has got his embellishments, and I got mine. So there.
So wait a minute. So I asked you to do this assignment, and we're coming up with the same guy?
Unfortunately, yes. Well, that was one.
That's weird.
It is weird. It hadn't really occurred to me because, to be honest, I don't really pay much attention to batting leaders or any leaders. Who's leading in this? I mean, I look at them.
I look at them too. I'm with you. I'm the same. You know, I'm worried. I'm worried about the. For me, it's a team thing, so I'm not worried so much about the leader in this and the leader in that. But I do look at it. I'm aware of it.
They especially batting average, which I discount. I do look at a variety of things, but batting average is not normally one of them. And if Alex hadn't mentioned it, I'd have blissfully gone on in the season without caring who's leading the Central League in batting average until the season ended and I had to write a story that included it.
Right.
So the other one being said, although Kensuke Kondo, I believe, is still he's still leading the Pacific League in batting, although he no longer has enough at plate appearances to qualify on the leaders table. There's a rule in Japan where if they take however many plate appearances are necessary to qualify you.
Oh, and subtract that.
And they count those as outs. They count every one of those as a plate as an at bat without a hit.
Right.
And if your batting average is still higher than everybody else's, you're the batting champion.
Oh.
So you could you don't.
I remember
need
hearing
enough.
About that a long time ago, but it's never really. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, we had
since
a guy.
I've been here.
We had a foreign player with Oryx, approximately 22 years ago, who won the Western League batting title because of that. He didn't have enough plate appearances, but he was way ahead of everybody. So anyway, so when I looked the other day, Kondo was still technically the Pacific League batting champion. He was quite amazing. And so those are the leaders that interested me. I guess the saves leaders, Dennis Sarfate blowing people away.
27
kind of
saves, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I'm going to talk about one of my colleagues showed me something that I had access to, and I didn't know I had access to because I work for Kyoto News, and all the baseball writers at Kyoto News have access to a database called Tsubasa, which Kyoto Digital, our subsidiary, sells to the media. They have a sports data business.
Right.
And so I have now have access to Kyoto Digital's sports data or baseball database, which is full of anecdotal fun things, like.
Okay.
And I'll give you a couple examples. I look for a couple of leaders in here. The right-handed and left-handed hitters in NPB who pull the ball in the air more than anybody else. The right-handed batter is Jose Lopez.
And Yuki Yanagita.
Wrong.
Oh!
49.4% of his balls in the air are hit to left field.
This is Lopez.
A left-handed batter is Shinosuke Abe. 45.5% of his fly balls are hit to right field. Okay, now another one. And this is one of my favorites. Fewest swings out of the zone on balls out of the zone. Fewest
guys who don't chase the most. The guys who don't chase.
Yeah, here's the thing. This is like the reigning champ and king forever, Takashi Toritani.
Oh.
And here's the thing that is really interesting to me is his percentage is the older he gets, he's getting less inclined to commit himself to pitches anyway. I think he's looking to make more mileage out of his walks.
Mm.
So he's not ripping at pitches out of the zone. So in 2014, which is the last year, the first year that Tsubasa has data for, he was second in Japan behind Yoshihiro Maru. Toritano was swinging at 12.9% of the pitches out of the zone.
I think they call that the chase rate, right?
Could be chase rate. All right.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Okay.
Not that much of a stat head, but yeah.
Okay, me neither to that effect, no. And Maru is 12.6, and then 2015. Since 2015, Toritani has led NPB.
Mm-hmm.
13.1% of swinging at 13.1% of the pitches out of the zone. And this is, and the reason why I think it's interesting about Toritani is how often pitchers still try to get him to chase.
Right.
like, what are you doing throwing a pitch? You know, he's not going to go for a pitch that's 3 inches out of the zone. Why do you think he's going to swing at one that's a foot away?
Right.
But they do it anyway. And it drives me nuts. But anyway,
you got to try.
You got to try sometime, I guess. This year, he's swinging at 9.6% of the pitches out of the zone. So that was kind of impressed me. Now, speaking of swings and such, the most swings and misses by pitchers with 500 pitches or more this season.
Acquired by pitchers.
Yeah, the highest swing and miss percentage by a pitcher with 500 pitches. So I wanted to include relievers in here.
Oh. The most.
The most. The pitcher who gets the most swings and misses. It's not a trivia question. It's okay.
It's Tomoyuki Sugano?
No, it's a Rafael Dolis.
Oh.
And it's on the forkball.
Interesting. Okay.
And I asked him about that. He says, you know, of course he considers his two seamer a breaking ball.
Yeah, so, I noticed that. But hey,
yeah.
That,
yeah, if but he throws the four seam. And I said,
I don't know how he's throwing it. I'll be paying more attention. But yeah.
Right. Yeah, he throws his four seamer more than his two seamer, but his forkball is his number one pitch, and that would speak to its effectiveness.
Mm.
Number two is Dennis Sorfatti, another guy who mastered a forkball in Japan.
I was going to say Dennis, but I didn't want to seem like
no, he has been. Yeah, he has been. But now the guy who gets the fewest swings and misses is Brian Schlitter.
Oh.
Pitch to contact, baby.
Pitch to contact. All right.
Okay.
So it's not Buchanan.
No, it's not. But anyway, so those were the things that caught my eye when I was scanning through my new toy.
Okay. For me, also in the Pacific League, I think one of my favorite players, Yuki Yanagita, back and healthy and banging again. And I was sitting around trying to think, who does this, because his swing really reminded me of somebody, but I couldn't think of who it was until recently. I was watching an MLB game, and it was Charlie Blackman of the Colorado Rockies, another left-handed hitter who just kind of wails away at pitches sometimes. Mm. I think their finish is real similar.
Okay.
And that's who he reminded me of. And I think Yanagita really has a chance at a triple crown. He's leading in homers with 23 now as we go into games here on Sunday, and 75 RBIs, I believe he has, mm-hmm. and he's really close with Seiichi Uchikawa, his teammate, in batting average. So we could be looking at a triple crown instead of a triple three, that triple three stat that you love so much.
Yeah, I do. I do indeed. And interestingly enough, I think somebody sat down and said, look, you know, you've had injury troubles. Give up on the stolen bases.
Yeah, that's true. That does seem to be the case.
Yeah, I think he's got, six or something? Oh, he's got 12 this year. So I think, yeah, I don't think he's going to give up on it, but I think we'll see. I think he's going to give up on it if he's got 20 stolen bases, you know, towards the end of September.
Yeah, he's easing up on it for sure. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, a few notes. This past week, Dennis Sorfatti, the aforementioned, he's the closer for the SoftBank Hawks, hit the 200 save milestone
mm-hmm.
In six plus seasons in MPB. That's pretty Awesome. I remember talking to you about him when we started this show, I think it was.
I knew you were... every time
you knew I was going to take out that needle and start nitpicking at you like that. You knew that.
Okay, folks, I'm a giant nit. John's picking.
Hey, I loved him from the start. He throws hard. He hits his spots. He has good control of his off-speed stuff, especially that knuckle curve that he throws. I was all over him from the moment I saw him in Hiroshima in 2011. You weren't, and then I realized, you know, you went back and looked at the stats that he had put together in the States, and it all made sense. But I liked what I was seeing.
Oh no, and I give you get credit for that. I was looking at other things, and I wasn't convinced. So, but no, I think you had your eye on the right things. So that happens. Sure, excellent. No, and, well done.
Yeah, okay. And he joked in the Hero interview that night, because he made it to the podium, that some of the guys on the team call him Grandpa, and because of his age and everything. And I want to let him know that I scored my career high in an officiated basketball game when I was 37.
Okay.
So he still has a lot more to go. He can get to 250. I think if he finishes, he's already got 27 saves. If he has a, let's say, 20 plus save second half and a similar season next year, I think he's surpassed that mark and earn a golden Players Club jacket. Mm. And that would put him alongside Alex Ramirez as the only other foreign or import player. Who's in the Golden Players Club. So that would, these milestones are also, I was talking to you before we started taping, and I said, why 200 wins and 250 saves? The save is so much more difficult. It's just a stat anyway. But I suppose they have to even it out somehow.
Well, they had to
put out so many more innings.
Yeah, well, they added the saves basically so they could make Kazuhiro Sasaki a member of the club.
Gotcha.
And in fact, originally, I think a save and a win were equal. So, and the other thing that strikes me, you know, I think they'll be officially eligible to call him Grandpa when he has a teammate on the Hawks first team that's younger than the snake tattoo.
I haven't seen his awesome tattoo.
He wanders around sometimes with his shirt off, and he's got this snake that wraps around his body.
Next up. and then one other note. Well, it's actually two combined into one. Shinji Mori, the pitching coach of the Lions, died on June 28th, and we didn't get a chance to mention that, even though I had gone out to MetLife Dome, the home of the Cebu Lions, and did the interview with Stefan Romero of the Oryx Buffaloes last weekend. And it was multiple organ failure. I guess they said they found out that it was caused by sepsis. And, you know, the team was pretty much down that day. I didn't talk about it on the show the next week. We just didn't have time. And the team seemed like there was a lot of pressure. When I went out that day, they had already lost on Friday, which was their first home game after his passing, Morty's passing. And they lost on Friday, and they lost on that Saturday. And I believe they won the series finale to get over that hump. But it just seemed like they just felt so, the players were really tight and felt a lot of pressure that they needed to win that game. And it wasn't a good atmosphere. And they were just coming off of Yusei Kikuchi giving up a couple home runs and losing the game on that previous Friday. And then also Toshiharu Ueda, the former manager of the Hankyu Braves, died on July 1st of illness. And you have, obviously I saw your picture that you posted the other day, have a lot of information and relationship with this guy.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, the show when we were talking about answering about managers, you know, it's funny because the players were all coming out, his former players with the Hankyu Braves were all coming about what a hard ass he was. You know, he'd get on everybody's case about anything because he just hated winning so much. He just hated losing so much. But you see, when I knew him, he was this kind of, he was kind of a Santa Claus kind of character. You know, he always had a smile for everybody. He'd go into the press box and he'd come up into me and he'd give me candy. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Here, have some candy. It's good. You know, I got it. It's good for you." And And he was always willing to chat, and he was always willing to ask questions. He's just the friendliest guy ever. And of course, what I noticed was that he had won in the regular season. He won 1,322 games in NPB when he was actually on the field. His teams won a few more, but mm-hmm. he wasn't there. And he played. This is for a guy who played in 122 games.
That didn't play very much at all.
No, see, and I was looking, and there've been a few guys who've played fewer games recently. Haruki Ihara, manager of the Lions and the Buffaloes, and the Lions again briefly. Mm-hmm. He played in fewer games, but pretty much, if you're not a star now, if you're not a regular player at some stage in your career, nobody wants you as a manager. You're out. So Ueda is probably the last time we'll see a manager win 1,000 games who didn't play in a 200.
Interesting. Okay. And you wrote a really nice piece about his passing and the legacy that he left. And I suggest you retweet that so that we can allow some of the people who missed it to get a chance to read it because it was really informative.
Well, thank
Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so the first one is from KP Wakataka, and he mm-hmm. says he's a fan, I think, of SoftBank.
I would guess so.
And he said the reason that he was sitting in left field one day in a game was that he forgot everywhere. He says north of Tokyo, but I think the geography is a little bit different. But if for intents and purposes, right. north of Tokyo, the seats for the home team are on the left side. So he said, he asks, when did the Fighters, Lions, and Eagles start that, and is there a reason?
Good question. The Fighters started it when they moved to Sapporo Dome, and the reason, according to Trey Hillman at the time, was that the stadium weight room is on the third base side of the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
There's more room on that side, and so that's where they put the Fighters clubhouse is closer to the weight room, and the Fighters' bench is closer to the weight room. So that was the reason for that. I don't think it was a plan. And then after that, and that was in 2004, and then 2005, they remodeled Sendai's stadium for the Eagles, who were a new team that year. And at that time, there was the clubhouse was a really kind of a ramshackle affair. We don't get to go into the clubhouses in Japan.
Major as reporters, yeah.
Right. In major leagues, you can. I had been in the Yomiuri Giants and in the Fighters clubhouse at Tokyo Dome 20, 30 years ago. But pretty much you don't go in there. And so it's really hard to see. So, but anyway, 2004, the Fighters did it. 2005, the Eagles began playing in Sendai in their clubhouse. And, well, actually, I should say their bench was on the third base side. And I mm-hmm. suspect they did it just to be different. Mm. Because when they had a plan, they were already playing. The team offices, both teams' clubhouses are now on the first base side. So the Eagles players have to walk around the basically walk around the stadium to get to the clubhouse, and the visitors have easy access. So I'm guessing they did it just to be different. And then in 2007, the Lions received a huge amount of money. They received $50 million for a Daisuke Matsuzaka.
Mm-hmm.
And they used that much of that money to remodel Seibu Dome about 2008. And when they remodeled it, they put the Lions switched from the third base side to the first base side. And I don't know why that was, other than my thinking might be that, well, they were using the third base side in the autumn for some practice stuff, and so they could remodel the first base side while they were using the third base side. So that's where their dugout is now, but I have no idea why.
Okay. Yeah, I can just tell you that there are cultural differences just in terms of where you stand on an escalator if you're not walking up the escalator.
Oh, true enough.
Cultural differences that just span across the country, and there really is no reason in particular.
True enough. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that because, you know, in basically from the Kansai region west, you stand on the right side of the escalator, and from
if you're not walking up, so that other people who want to walk up the escalator
walk on the left side,
right?
And then in Eastern Japan, you walk on the right side and stand on the left side, which means you have a situation in Nagoya, which is between the two, where I think they actually passed a law that said you're not allowed to walk on escalators because people were bumping into each other and causing trouble.
Yeah. So there are, and I don't know that some of these things are regional or caused by geography or anything. I just know they're different. But the thing to note about Japan a lot of times is we have in the States and other countries have time zones. And in Japan, it's all on one time zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would think that everything would be in sync and is in line with everything in the country, and that's not always the case. And
no.
It's a case of dare to be different sometimes. So
indeed, and almost regional pride and regional pride, spite, envy, jealousy, all those things, all those fun things work together.
Okay. All right. Our next question is from Max in Los Angeles, and it's an MP3.
Hi, Jim and John. Ichiro Suzuki just became the major league record holder for hits in a career by a player born outside of the United States. Do you think next season he will A, still be playing in the major leagues, B, be retired, or C, playing baseball in Japan? Thank you for your answers.
Thanks, Max.
Thank you, Max. We're still waiting for the voice. I guess you didn't send it right away. Package it up, buddy. We're waiting. All right, so Ichiro, well, that's a great question. Will he be retired? Will he be playing in MLB, or will he be playing in MPB? That is such a difficult question, but what I can tell you from what I've ascertained from seeing him.
What have you ascertained, Mr. Gibson?
The way you say it, it sounds like I should beep that up. But
smack that hazard.
Hashtag high heat.
We know he's no longer a player, an everyday mm-hmm. player. And I think that's what the Marlins are telling us by the way they're using him. Mm-hmm. You just see him come to the plate as pinch hitting. You rarely see him in the field anymore.
Although he did. To set a major league record by being the oldest player to ever to start a game in center field, which he had done a couple of years ago as well.
Right, so, recently.
Yeah.
So the best and worst case scenarios we've seen out of him is, he can be a guy who comes up and maybe gets a walk as a pinch hitter, maybe gets mm-hmm. a hit as a pinch hitter, but, not a guy you want to bring up with guys on base and try to get the winning run home. He's more of a guy you would start an inning off with and try to get a rally going. But it depends on how teams value him. And I'm not really sure how ML teams value a guy whom we've seen do these kinds of things the past 2 to 3 years with the Marlins.
Hmm. Well, he has, ironically, since he stopped being a regular, since mm-hmm. he's adjusted to being a bench guy, he's become a good on-base percentage player.
Right.
And he but he needs to play. You can't just leave him on the bench and pinch hit him. But he can still play defense. So he's a defensive replacement. He's a bench player, occasional starter. Does anybody have any value? Yeah. I think he has enough value left to be in the majors at least another year. And I think he has enough financial value and pride that he'll never, ever put on an NPB uniform unless it's in an old-timers game.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I was going to get to, is that the questions you have to ask are, what does he really see himself doing? And I think we mentioned it on the show years and years ago. This must have been about, I don't know, way, way back in 2013.
Damn, that was a long time ago.
That it seems like closers just drop off the map, but guys who are, and this is an MPB, guys who are really productive hitters and stars with their teams just kind of sit at the end of the bench and then one day say, you know what, I'm only getting maybe 50 at bats per year, I'm going to retire. But they don't, they fade away. And I think this is what we're seeing Ichiro do in the United States, which is something we don't always see. A star player decide I'm going to sit at the end of the bench and just be used when they need me and just be used occasionally. And so that's one thing to do. And that's one thing to think about. And I don't see him doing that. I don't see Ichiro coming back to NPB to be that guy.
Mind
then
you,
again, if he wants to play until he's 50, the options are going to be NPB, indie ball,
Taiwan,
or other places. It's not going to be with an MLB organization that says, "Well, we'll let you sit around in the minors and maybe bring you up for a couple months, you know, in June or something or September." Yeah, I don't see that happening.
I don't either. So
for next year. Well, the question is for next year, so I would say.
I think he'll be in it. I would think so, in MLB. You mean?
I agree.
Yeah, NPB. I don't see that. Although the Hawks, no doubt, if Ichiro Suzuki is a free agent, I'm sure SoftBank will offer him several million dollars to come and play because that's what SoftBank does.
Okay.
Regardless of whether they actually need him or not, they'll offer him millions of dollars to come and play.
Exactly. All right, and the last question, wow, this is I don't know, the last time we got three questions in. The last question comes from Stuart Miller, who's a Carp fan, and he says, do you think the recent quality of pitching from Kazuki Yabuta is something that he can continue, hashtag high heat? And so I'm peering into the future now because everyone knows that I have this ability.
We do. This guy puts Superman to shame.
And, oh, hang on, wait, it looks murky. No, I've liked this kid since the first time I saw him. He has velocity. He has deception. He's got that little move with the hand before he releases the ball. He's got the same type of stuff as Akitake Okada. I just don't know why it has taken him so long to get to this point. But I thought he'd be successful. And so maybe 8-1 is a little bit more than I expected in terms of what I thought, you know, he would be record-wise. But he's pitching really well. They didn't actually start. He pitched out of the bullpen most of April. Mm. And I think he started at the end of May, May 30th. I think he went six innings. And
well, he had a really long. He got the boost. There was I think he had a 4 or 5 inning long relief.
It was at three innings on
three
May
innings.
23rd.
Okay.
Yep. 3 innings on May 23rd.
And after that, they said, "Hey, let's give this guy. Hey, this guy seems really good at 3 innings. Let's see if he can go 5 or 6 or 7 or whatever."
Right, and he beat Hanshin yesterday, and that's 5 starts that he has made that they've won. And he has won them all, so he's 8-1, which is, you know, pretty impressive. Do I think that's going to continue? I don't know about that. He does give up a lot of hits to right-handed batters, but he's tough on left-handers. I just expect him to be a good, solid pitcher. And like we talked about before, the Carp have been able to make up for the losses of two quality starters in back-to-back years. And you might even argue that they're getting better production from guys like Okada and Yabuta than they got from, dare I say, Maeda and Kenta Maeda and Hiroki Kuroda.
I wouldn't say Maeda, but definitely Kuroda, yeah.
Yeah, so, Maeda wasn't 8-1, though.
Well, no, but they weren't scoring a zillion runs for him neither.
Right. And so that with that offense, there's no telling record-wise where how far he'll be able to go. But he's already tied with Tomoyuki Sugano for, you know, with 8 wins. So he could end up leading the league in wins. And we're just, like I said last week, we're just now past the halfway point mathematically. So perhaps he'll be in a situation where he can have a share of the league lead in wins. And gosh, I don't see a Sawamura award there for him, but he certainly is a quality pitcher, and I expect him to do well. And like I said, I expected this from him before. So as I've told you, I've told listeners before, these guys are not the players are not cookies. You don't just put them in the oven and then come back 10 minutes and expect them to be baked and they're all at the same point.
No, that would be half baked.
They all develop at different times and different speeds, and they're not all. Some guys have come out of college. Some guys have pitched at Koshien. They all have different experiences, so it takes time. It takes different amounts of times, but it doesn't matter if you can play and you can get there, and the light goes on. I would expect it to stay on. As long as he's healthy.
I think that's generally true with pitchers. I think with most players, they reach a point soon after they get regular playing time, and they mature. It's very rare to see players take huge steps after that, but I find very often pitchers who are good enough to play, mm-hmm. generally they make a splash, and I think probably where you see Yabuta at the end of the season, it's uh-huh. basically that's going to probably be his high point, and then then he'll probably get more and more pitching time to become more and more valuable. This is a standard pattern. Guys get pitching time, they get a little better with more and more pitching time, and they peak. I mean, you see this with most pitchers. So after 2 or 3 years in a regular role, that's about as good as they're going to get.
Okay.
And then it's kind of a steady decline after that. So I think right now he's got a little bit more growth in that because he's still in a use pattern. He's still, you know, as you mentioned, he's getting hit by certain groups of batters, which means he needs to come up with a couple of other options. Mm-hmm. But no reason to think he can't. So
He born on August 7th. So his birthday would be a little bit less than a month, and he'll be 25. So I expect him to keep going forward and keep moving up.
Probably till he's 26, 27. I think by the time this year, he's not going to get a lot better, but he'll get more and more pitching time, and he'll learn how to manage that. And so he'll have a couple of years where his value is going to increase, so.
And the Carp are starting to really, really make some headway and pull away from the rest of the Central League. So, he'll be able to pitch low-stress games and get ready for the playoffs. And I expect him to be a starter in the playoffs as well.
Yep.
Okay. All right, guys, thank you very much for listening. Anyone else who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast, or leave us a note on the Facebook page and hashtag those Twitter comments or questions with high heat so I can find them.
We don't want John to lose your questions.
Old guys have trouble keeping up with their stuff.
Speak for yourself. Hold on. Where's my microphone?
Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.